Did any of you actually eat a Philly cheesesteak when we were in Philly?
This is Auto Collabs.
No.
Golly. Well, I can say I had a few bites of one, but not from the Geno's. It was one of the catered ones from Xfinity Live, which I might add was really good. It was really good. Like, it's still... It gave me, I didn't eat a lot. Like, that always happens at events, right? I just run around.
It's frustrating.
And I just nibble on this.
Oh, because you're always talking to the mic. You don't want to be all burpy.
Yeah, it's bad. Either talking in a mic or talking to
you
people.
You feel like, that, is there a semblance when you like, sometimes even before we start a pod and like I've just eaten lunch or something and you eat and you're like, I better throw some gum in.
Yeah.
Like it might come through the mic or something.
Yes. No, there's definitely a thing there. There's definitely a thing there. You know, all the activity around Asotocon, there was the moment when we were on stage, or I wasn't on stage, but Jason Stein, today's guest, was on stage. And I had this flashback to the first automotive event that I went to, which was an Automotive News Retail Forum, which actually we found out Jason concepted that and started that when he was the publisher at Automotive News. And I remember seeing him on stage at that event and hearing him speak. And he was just so articulate and knowledgeable, and he commanded the authority. And I was like, dude, that dude is buttoned up, right? I felt like I was at a real thing. And then to see him on the stage at Asotocon, bringing that heat and the energy to kind of like a new tone, new questions, like a new vibe, understanding things have changed. For me, it was like a moment of like full circle. It was just total full circle.
There was a new tone. That's for sure.
It was different.
There was definitely a new tone. And I feel like he was willing to push some boundaries. And I appreciate that about a lot of people in our industry. Everyone's kind of like loosening the belt buckle just a little
bit. Have to.
You know?
Have to.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I hope that shines through in our conversation today. I didn't get a chance to actually... I feel like I was running around. Man, you boys put me to work.
He was like, you know, I have another job. Like, Michael, we just need you between the hours of 9 a.m. and 3:30 p.m. with interviews on the 20s. Is that okay?
Yeah, totally okay. Let's go.
I can't.
Call me Mr. Miyagi. But I'm excited to hop into this conversation with Jason Stein and feel some of that energy. I know it's going to shine through, and we hope you guys enjoy it as well.
All right, this has been a long time coming, but Jason, thank you so much for spending a few minutes with us today on the Auto Collabs podcast.
It is great to be with the two of you, Paul, Kyle. Thank you.
So, yeah, absolutely. So, like, you were the face of, I feel like, retail automotive when I first started paying attention. And I went to the Auto News Retail Forum in Louisiana the last time the show was there, and it was the first time I heard you from stage, and I was like, this dude is buttoned up. Like, I felt like I was just like, and I was like,
are you
I was
sure you're
living
looking at the right person.
I was because
I was like, living. I must have been interviewing Alex Vedder.
Wasn't that Carl Sewell? I think that was Carl Sewell.
No, it was definitely you, because at the time I was in the reconditioning business. So this was my first industry event, and I had this feeling like, I am nowhere near smart enough to be in this room right now. And you were just like leading everyone through this half day event. And I was just struck with the poise and that everyone you spoke with, I was like, he knows everything about everybody and everything that they do. And so that being-
It was a good research team. It was a great research team. It was not me.
So, but my question that follows that is like, how did you get to that spot? Like, how did you get into what you were doing with Automotive News? Like, what path in automotive led you there?
Two hands on the steering wheel, ironically enough, and quite literally. So how I got down that path was by starting my own car column in Fort Wayne, Indiana, when I was a sports writer covering Bobby Knight and Indiana University basketball and watching him choke people and get
throw
fired. Throw chairs, the whole thing.
Similar industry.
But you know what? I was totally prepared for automotive once I dealt with Bobby Knight, because, you know, red sweaters or not, you know, the very similar styles. And I was covering Peyton Manning's first year, a disastrous first year as the quarterback of the Indianapolis Colts. and Bob Davies' terrible exit out of Notre Dame football. So I was
there must be more.
Right? There's got to be more here somewhere. And it was two hands on the wheel. And what it was starting my own car column. And the newspaper at the time did not have a car columnist for its Sunday paper. This was, I said newspaper. Remember that? Remember the fond days of a newspaper?
Oh,
no, that's where I started.
The smell.
I know.
The sound.
You'd go on an airplane and everybody would be reading a newspaper.
That's right.
Handing it to, you know, it'd be like, oh, are you done with that sports section? Because, you know, I know it's tucked into the pocket in front of you, but I'd really like to see what the scores were last night.
Oh, my gosh. I barely have enough room for like my phone and my elbows these days. How in the world did that even work?
I'm just like, you know, crossing over with the newspaper in front of everybody's face.
Someone's got to do a spoof of that, like four people across in an airplane. Yes.
And our fingers are definitely cleaner these days.
No
that's
doubt.
For sure.
No doubt.
Because you get all that ink all over it. But no, I was definitely ink stained from the start. I grew up in Canada and made my way down to the U.S. And eventually as that sports writer who started his own car column. And what I discovered was as a car columnist, lo and behold, manufacturers really like to bring their vehicles to you to have you drive them and test them and write about them in the Sunday paper so that car dealers who are in the area will appreciate the fact that you're testing the new product, and then they can sell or they can put their ads next to that content. They could sell more cars. It's a wild formula that worked for about 150 years or so, or at least 100 years with the vehicle. But, you know, that experience gave me all of a sudden, I had five or six different manufacturers with vehicles in my driveway. And of course, my neighbors thought that I was dealing drugs or something of that nature because I had all this new product all the time. How do you get this? And you explain to people that I'm a car columnist and they're like, wow, what's that? And I said, well, you can read it in Sunday's paper. So lo and behold, that got me close to the, the auto industry closer. It also got me closer with the retail industry because many friends became, or many dealers became friends. And it just all started on a path, but ultimately led to Automotive News and the role as a marketing reporter, which was what I was hired in at 2003. Huh. And this beautiful world of automotive was wide open, and all of a sudden people were calling with story ideas, and I was getting to know many the same dealers who you both know. I mean, the successful car dealers who are out there. And I discovered the entrepreneurialism of the automotive retail world. And I'm still driving the cars. And now I just have a different platform. And after 18 years at Automotive News, including the last 8 as the publisher, it's been an enormously gratifying ride, so to speak. And now here we are with still a very close connection to the retail world. A radio show on Sirius XM that runs 4 times a week. And my neighbors still think that I'm dealing drugs. So, you know, full circle.
What's actually, it's funny because right okay, I think my wife actually has like a question sometimes whether I'm in the car business, the CIA, or dealing drugs. Just because, you know, and not
let me
that,
talk
not,
to her.
Let me talk to her. No, but it really is like I remember back, you know, that it's such an... The auto industry as a whole is an industry that a lot of people only get to barely peer into, and because of that, there's a lot of ambiguity, a lot of ominous feeling to it. You know, I remember, I'll never forget. This was probably, 8-9 years ago, and I had the evening off, and we had a new finance manager, and I was the new car director. And the finance manager calls me up, and he's in Reynolds. We're in Reynolds at that point. And he calls me up and goes, hey, I can't find where to put, I can't remember what data point in, is it? And my wife's sitting across, we're both watching TV, we have it muted, and I go, all right, all you gotta do is control shift J, move to the back screen, hit K, but you know, and like, I'm walking through this, she goes, what are you?
As he's eating,
you know, I'm a coder.
Yeah, right? I'm sure you've had those similar experiences. fast forward to today, and the experiences are kind of coming at us. And I, you know, at least from my perspective, and I've only been in the industry for 12 years, but you know, we were actually just on, we recorded with Tom Ryan, and just this speed of new things hitting, new ideas. You know, there's a news story one day that says this, and the next, you know, chips are up, chips are down. You know, there's inventory's up, inventory's down. You know, approaching this from the perspective of having been in news and now being on, you know, the tech and consulting side, you know, how are you kind of encouraging people, or how are you approaching these many facets of news and change and the potential realities over the next 5 years?
It's absolutely crazy. And what I would tell you is that when I joined the industry, I would say full time in 2003, we thought that we were operating at a fairly blinding level at that stage, because it was talked about at that time. And now you think about it almost 20 years ago. Wow, things really are changing. Wow, this auto industry, it's never been faster. And I think back to those days when really kind of inventory was the only issue, maybe incentives were the only issue. And when I was covering General Motors, they were making more money on their mortgage business than they were on vehicles, which was, you know, that would foreshadow a huge problem. But what was the biggest concern? Well, it was not the transition to more of a direct selling method. Nobody really talked about Tesla very much. There wasn't the concern over chips or labor shortages or any of the factors that have even just come on over the course of the last 2 years. I would argue the last 2 years has been more impactful than the previous 20. And wow, it's shifted and changed everything with an inertia that could never have been realized. In fact, one automaker executive told me about a year ago, look, we wanted to go to build to order, and we're at build to order now, but we never could have got there. Never could have made that happen in the old days. And I think what COVID taught us was that all that acceleration that was leading up to 2020 just went into hyperdrive. I mean, if it was moving along at 5 miles an hour and the industry was making changes and the industry was concerned about autonomous vehicles or ride sharing or peer-to-peer or any of that stuff, any of the things that would really hit the retail network in the stomach, certainly the last 2 years have shown that the changes can be even more remarkable than we imagined, not necessarily in a bad way. And actually, the value of the American car dealer is greater than ever. And I would argue against the direct selling method, they've learned to become just better direct sellers in general. And they've learned to connect with their communities in a better way, in a deeper way. They've learned how to provide service in a way that maybe they didn't realize before. And, now they're more successful than ever. So I would say how to navigate where we are right now, it's all about context. I mean, what speed are we at now? What speed were we at in 2003 when I joined Automotive News? It's probably the same type of speed. There's just different issues.
The velocity always feel fast when you're in it, right? Until you ride the roller coaster the second time or the third time, and we don't get that. Yeah. We don't get to do that, right? It's always a new roller coaster, right? The hill's always different. The drop, the acceleration, they're all different.
And this automotive industry, and the two of you know this, as well as anybody, it's a different ride every day. For sure. And that's what makes it exciting, whether you're on the dealer side or the automaker side or the parts suppliers or the other vendors, is that no 2 days are the same. That's for sure.
It's true.
I mean, whether it's a month-long close or a new product that's rolling out or a new challenge to the business coming from some disruptor that's coming from the side that you can learn from. But that's what makes it the best, most dynamic business of any, in my opinion.
Couldn't agree. So you mentioned that, you know, you just talked about dealers being great at serving their communities, learning how to do service better, learning how to do, you know, like a more streamlined sales process better. But you also have like this experience in the retail side, and you have a lot of interaction with the retail side of the auto industry. Right now, the FTC, these proposed regulations that are up for public comment, has been a little bit brutal, right? As the public comments have opened up, and Kyle and I have been paying attention to like number of YouTubers and content creators that really position the dealers that we know and love so much because we understand who they are as people and what they do. It's a very different narrative, right? And the kind of the PR problem of franchise retail auto. What is your perspective on how we can maybe start to like communicate the essence of the good side of franchise retail auto to the retail public?
Yeah, I mean, it's a challenge in general because unfortunately car dealers have had this stigma for an awful long time, and it's got nothing to do with what's happened, even the improvements even over the last couple of years. There just seems to be this thing like sort of the dentist. I mean, you know, I don't want to go to the dentist. I don't want to, or I don't want to get my car fixed at the dealership. You know, there are obviously some bad actors in every field. And you know, that's car dealers or non-car dealers or, you know, other industries. But the point is, I think that car dealers have made enormous strides over the course of the last few years to really change some, reputational, issues that existed prior to. And what's the best way to get out there and tell that story? Well, I think there probably has to be a more concerted effort to tell the consumer that your local car dealer is supporting the local community and the charities and is a member of the community, and you're going to see them all over the place helping people. And there are so many efforts that are going on. I'm going to be involved in a charity golf outing that occurs next week that benefits the kids of Southeast Michigan and actually across the US. And there are numerous actors and athletes and superstars coming to that to help support this. And those car dealers don't generally go out there and say, "Hey, look at this is what I've done." And they, right, you know, necessarily run an ad in the, you know, in the local news. But you know, there are really, really, really entrepreneurial positive forces that are in every community that are the backbone of those communities. And so I think that it's always going to be a PR challenge. The best that can happen is that I think car dealers tell their stories maybe a little bit better. And of course associations like NADA can help that. But some of the comments are fairly brutal. They're nothing new.
Have you ever seen a concerted effort, a broad scale concerted effort be effectively deployed in your time in the industry? And I mean like a broad scale PR campaign to promote the good parts of franchised auto dealers. Have you ever seen anything like that?
Not really. No. I think, you know, if anything, the franchise car dealers have just stuck to their knitting. I mean, they've sold cars. They've helped members of the community. They've provided jobs. We ran a program for years, you know, the best dealerships to work for, mm-hmm. a program that I was a part of. Just in the formation of it, and what an awesome feel good program mm-hmm. that was, that highlighted all of the great things that those dealerships do, not just for their employees, but for their communities. And, you know, there are numerous examples of those efforts. It's just, no, Paul, there's not been a concerted effort to really go out there and say, "Hey, look at this is what we're doing." But, you know, the dentists don't do that either. So, right. You know, but you got
to
have,
you can choose clean, not to go to the dentist unless you have an emergency though. The car right. is like a little bit more of a regular flow of life, you know?
Well, we'll see what happens. I mean, unfortunately with the pricing of new vehicles at record levels, people are hanging onto their cars a lot longer. I had the opportunity to interview the head of SEMA, to talk about the aftermarket business and the tuner business and parts and service. And, you know, there's so much of that's going on now in this post-COVID world, because frankly, the affordability issue with primarily the middle class is evaporating just with the price of vehicles and now interest rates being higher. So with that, I think you're going to see people spending more time at dealerships, getting their cars fixed. Mm-hmm. There's an opportunity there for dealers to just get closer with their customers and to explain the kinds of ways that they can assist.
Do you think that, obviously, if we're going to change this perception of retail automotive, which I think is necessary, if there's any hope of, you know, of things not just coming crashing down on the dealer network. And I don't think that that's like an imminent, you know, imminent death type thing. I'm not a fatalist or anything where in 3 years we're all going down, right? But Where does the hope lie? Does it lie in just dealers learning to tell their story better? Because I think that, like, I was listening to you say, you know, dealers haven't told their story well. They don't run ads about the charities that they do, and I understand that. Like, I've talked to dealers personally that, hey, we just get the job done. We just continue to do the good work. We don't praise it. We don't celebrate it. We don't put it in the newspapers. We don't run PR gigs or anything like that. Does that need to shift in order for this cultural perception for it to kind of like be brought out into the light? And have you seen like the best cases of that in the way that dealers go about that communication?
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be an opportunity for dealers to move forward here anyway, because the transition to electric vehicles is real. Mm-hmm. Whether we like it or not, the technology is going to get much more sophisticated. It's going to be very difficult for you to bring your new EV or relatively new EV down to the local guy to fix it, because they won't have the tools, the capability, the technical know-how. So dealers are going to rise to the forefront, because you're going to have to go to your local dealership in order to fix that very complicated vehicle that's in your driveway. And dealers, good dealers, are putting a lot of money and effort into the expansion of service bays and technical training. And that EV transition is going to create a real chance to build a closer relationship between the consumer and the local dealer. And I would say examples, you know, I think back to the Bergstrom family that's in, northern Wisconsin area. They have been ultimate stewards of the family values and the community, and have lent so much support. That's actually a group that does tell its story well.
Yeah, they do.
And they've got, I don't know, 20 to 30 different brands, so they're not beholden to any one manufacturer. But they take that kind of northern Wisconsin area, and they have really made it into that culturally relevant family business and transcended that culture to the community. And everybody in that area knows who the Bergstroms are, and they know how solid the business is for the community, what they provide back. And so maybe there should be more Bergstroms in the world.
No doubt. I love, I'm like, that is a perfect example. I couldn't have asked it better. I know the Bergstrom organization, and I've seen their stuff.
Tim and John.
And I don't know them personally, but I've watched them do that. And so I do think that it is up to people like us to kind of highlight and bring those to the forefront so that others can just at least have a bird's eye view, at least have a vision for what that looks like, both in the community, with employees. You know, there's so many incredible dealers out there that are not just doing the groundwork, but also telling their story well. And I think that that's something that you know, you through your time have done well for both the OEM and the dealer network. And I really can't wait to have some time in person with you at a SotoCon and hanging out and listen to the way that you curate these conversations, as Paul said earlier, and just thankful for you joining us today and giving us a little bit of insight into not just the yesterday, but tomorrow for the automotive industry.
I'm honored to be part of the program. I look forward to seeing you all in person, and I will leave my drug dealer friends behind.
Wonderful. Thanks so much, Jason. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Can I tell you a legitimate thought that ran through my mind as I listened to...
Is this a real sentence you just said?
Jason, start talking. I mean, here it is. I wrote down, do all Canadians start in the newspaper industry? Because that's certainly how I got started.
That was
my entry point to automotive.
Maybe.
Every single one of them start that way.
Wrote down...
Even the ones that start as developers start in the newspaper industry.
Seriously. I also wrote down that the smell of newspaper gives me anxiety. Like, to this day, if I get a whiff of newsprint, I'm like...
That's funny. It has the opposite effect on me.
Complete. It's like calming and wonderful.
I was just going to say that.
I feel like I need a cup of coffee and a great like outdoor setting, and I'm good.
Because of this conversation, I am going to read a newspaper this week.
On an airplane.
No. Not on an airplane. That brings us back to another episode, though. That's a really great way to bring it around. You know, Jason, it's interesting to see his career go from
newspaper, right? And then just this massive impact on retail automotive, like just broad scale. Everyone knew the name, knew his face, you know, heard him speak and understood that. And then he pivots out to actually like face more of like toward the retail side of the business, like from the consumer facing, you know, entertainment and just like car culture. And now like to see him still, like the fact that he still speaks at all these industry events, he's interested enough to be involved with what Asotu is doing. There still is like this point of pivot where I think it just iterates that it just gets in your blood and you're always like going to be kind of interested in it.
Well, what I love about it is, and this is a similar story for me, and I think a lot of people that are in auto, it's like, okay, I tiptoe into it, you know, writing maybe a little thing or being in sales, or maybe I'm a part of a tech company and I tiptoe in. And then there's always this moment where it's like, but over there, and then you're right back into it. But by the time you're back into it, you go deep. And what I love is, you know, and we saw this even with Steve Greenfield. It's like, got a job, you know, working for Mannheim.
Love that story.
And so, but now, like, literally shifting and working on the trajectory of automotive, and to see that as a thread for so many of the people that are like Jason Stein, that are like Steve Greenfield, that are going, no, I'm in this and I'm actually invested in crafting and curating the narrative, is so encouraging to me, because it, you know, I think many people get the imposter syndrome. It's like, who am I to kind of be a part of that? And Jason, and especially in this conversation, he gave me so much encouragement to go, oh, I just started writing a little column in a newspaper down in a little city. And now I'm shifting the narrative by the conversations I'm a part of. And that's an okay Truth. Place for a lot of people to be in our industry. And I think the more people that lean in that way, the quicker innovation goes and the more we can be as a retail automotive industry.
Well, I feel like the story of Jason Stein's re-entry almost into the scrum that is retail automotive is kind of just getting started. Thank you so much for spending some time with us here today. On behalf of Kyle Mountseer, Michael Cirillo, and myself, thanks for listening to Auto Collabs. We'll see you next time.
Sign up for our free and fun to read daily email for a free shot of relevant news in automotive, retail, media, and pop culture. You can get it now at asotu.com. That's ASOTU.com. If you love this podcast, please leave us a review and share it with a friend. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time.
Welcome to Auto Collapse.
Why are we recording?
Are we rolling yet?